Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Judicial Participation and Plea Negotiations Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 13, 2013, the Supreme Court announced its decision in United States v. Davila. The case considered whether judicial participation in plea negotiation, in violation of Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 11C1, automatically requires the vacating of a subsequent guilty plea, regardless of whether the violation prejudiced the defendant. By a vote of 9-0, the court held, for an opinion by Justice Ginsburg, judicial participation in violation of Rule 11C1 does not require that a defendant's guilty plea be vacated if the record shows no prejudice to the defendant's decision to plead guilty. Justice Scalia filed an opinion concurring in part and in the judgment, which was joined by Justice Thomas. To discuss the case, we have Mark Bonner, who is an associate professor at Ave Maria School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Bonner.
Hello, my name is Mark Bonner. I'm an associate professor of law at Ave Maria School of Law, and I'm going to give you a sort of a postmortem in U.S. versus Anthony Davila, which the Supreme Court recently decided. The issue there in that case is whether a violation of Rule 11's prohibition of trial courts participating in plea discussions calls for automatic vacatur of the plea, whether or not the defendant objected to it and whether or not prejudice is shown. The 11th Circuit had so held. They held that if a judge violates Rule 11, even if no prejudice is shown and no objection is made, it's considered systemic, a structural error, and automatic vacatur will be applied. That is to say, the plea will be vacated and the case will be sent back down to the court for further proceedings. The Supreme Court, as predicted, I did a podcast just after oral arguments in this case, and I predicted the likelihood of a unanimous Supreme Court, and I came pretty close. It was seven justices voted to vacate the 11th Circuit's rule, and two justices, Scalia and Thomas, concurred in the judgment. So all nine justices held that the automatic vacatur does not apply where a trial judge, U.S. district judge, violates Rule 11's prohibition on participating in plea negotiations. A couple of rules to have in mind, there's really basically Rule 11 and Rule 52 are involved in this case. Rule 11 of the Criminal Procedure Rules, 11C1, provides that the court must not participate in plea discussions between the defendant and the attorney for the government. Now, this issue wasn't raised in the case. It was just, it didn't come up, but I think it should have. Rule 11C1 says, an attorney for the government and the defendant's attorney or the defendant when proceeding pro se may discuss and reach a plea agreement. The court must not participate in these discussions. In Davila, the magistrate judge had told the defendant, approached the judge ex parte, had asked the judge, said, I'm not happy with my defense lawyer. All he wants me to do is plead guilty. I want a new lawyer. And the judge said, well, you know, sometimes the best advice a lawyer can give you is to plead guilty. That looks like a good idea for you to do it in this case. 11th Circuit said that that's automatic reversal, even though the guilty plea didn't occur until 3 months later, and it was before a U.S. district judge, not before the magistrate. So 11C1 does provide that the court must not participate in plea discussions, but the end of that rule, Rule 11H, states that a variance from these procedures is harmless error if it does not affect substantial rights. So the rule itself, it provides for a harmless error analysis. Now, there's another rule that applies also. It's Rule 52, which is just the general harmless error rule, and it provides that harmless error will cause a reversal. Well, harmless error, the defendant will be the standard where the defendant objects at trial, and the burden then is on the government to show harmless error. But Rule 52B speaks to plain error, and that is if the defendant doesn't object or bring the matter to the attention of the court, then the burden is on the defendant to show that the error occurred and affected substantial rights of his. There's one more gloss that arises in this case, and it has to do that some plain error is structural error. That is to say, it's conclusively presumed to affect substantial rights, even if there was no objection made and no showing made by the defendant of any actual harm. If the defendant can show that a structural error occurred, he'll get automatic vacatur. But structural error has been found in some, really earth-shattering errors, such as denial of counsel of choice, denial of a public trial, or failure to convey to a jury that guilt must be proved beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, Dovely was arguing that his lack of objection to the magistrate's comments should be considered structural error, and the Supreme Court has decided, no, it's not structural error. The Supreme Court in Davila unanimously holds that the 11th Circuit's automatic vacator rule is incompatible with Rule 11H of the federal rules, which says that harmless error shall be applied. The court does note that Rule 11C1 was adopted, the rule prohibiting judges from participating in plea discussions, was adopted as a prophylactic measure and not one impelled by the Due Process Clause or any other constitutional requirement. So the fact that we have this federal rule isn't because the Constitution requires it. It's just a prophylactic rule adopted by the Supreme Court for federal cases. Indeed, up until the early 1980s, U.S. district judges often participated in plea negotiations, and they still do in many states. Not only that, but anybody who's ever done a civil case federally knows that the trial judge is involved very heavily in beating the parties into a resolution of the case. So the thought behind this prohibition of the court participating in plea negotiations has to do basically with looking out for the defendant being kind of pressured into pleading guilty and fearing that if he doesn't plead guilty, he'll antagonize the judge. But the Supreme Court in Davila did hold that instead of automatically vacating Davila's guilty plea, the Court of Appeals, 11th Circuit, should have considered whether it was reasonably probable that but for the magistrate's exhortations to plead guilty, Davila would have exercised his right to go to trial. They sent it back down. They vacated the case and sent it back down to the Court of Appeals, telling them that they should look at the entire record, not the magistrate's comments. So sort of a totality of the circumstances approach to seeing whether or not error occurred. The Supreme Court did leave open the possibility that extraordinary circumstances could allow Davila's claim to be judged under the harmless error standard, where the government has the burden, despite Davila is not having objected, which normally would require Davila to demonstrate plain error. The plain error he would have to demonstrate being that but for the error, he would not have pled guilty. So that is still open, but my reading of Davila basically is that the defendant is really going to be required to show, where he didn't object, show some actual prejudice to him. I would also add that there was a concurrence in the case. It was Justice Scalia and Thomas. And it's kind of a delightful little, it's a one-paragraph concurrence. It's a concurring in part and concurring in the judgment. And in this concurrence, both Justices Scalia and Thomas make the point that, and it's only one paragraph, they say that all we have to do is look at Rule 11H, which says that a variance from the requirements of this rule is harmless error if it does not affect substantial rights. End of story. The court notes that this calls for an across-the-board application of the harmless error prescription or absent prompt objection, the plain error rule, and that is, quote, the beginning and end of the case. And Scalia makes the point that he's made several times, actually often before, that we should not rely on the notes of the advisory committee to unearth Rule 11's alleged design, for the committee's view is not authoritative, and the text of the rule conclusively resolves the question before us. It seems pretty accurate to me. I would add in closing that since Davila, which is very recently decided by the Supreme Court, note the holding in Davila is the Supreme Court says that Rule 11 violation could be plain error if the judge's exhortation to plead guilty immediately elicited a plea, that this would be likely prejudicial. And in Davila, there was a three-month delay between the magistrate exhorting the defendant and the defendant actually pleading guilty before the district court. Well, the Fifth Circuit, actually, on June the 18th in U.S. versus PENA, P-E-N-A, Fifth Circuit number 11-50482, did find error. They cite Davila. And there the trial judge said, I'll take the guilty plea in this fraud case, but I want this other case pending out there also resolved, told that to the defense lawyer. And the very next day the court said, no, forget about it. I shouldn't have said that. Forget about it. And then 4 days later, the defendant signed a plea agreement. In this case in PENA, the Fifth Circuit did find that this was prejudicial error. So the court says that this proximity in time with respect to a decision to plead guilty after the wrongful participation in plea negotiations can rise to the status of plain error. So the takeaway is, even though it's not required by the Constitution, the trial judges, district judges, are not to participate in plea negotiations, plea discussions. And if they do, automatic vacatur is not required, that the plain error and harmless error rules do apply, but that if the guilty plea or decision to plead guilty closely follows the wrongful participation in time, then it may be plain error.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.